It's a shocking and hard to swallow paradigm shift, right? And I think that's part of the problem. And it took me a while to get here too. I mean, 7 years ago when I started on this journey, I was still doing kale shake and spinach shakes, you know, like blending those every day. I was, you know, but then I was like, I understood half of it, but the other half is what you're talking about. This is sort of the big moment when people realize there's another half of being red-pilled on nutrition, right? When you see through the matrix, and then you have to look through the matrix of everything we've been told. So I talk to so many people about this stuff, right? It's all I do is I travel around the world talking to people about health and nutrition, learning for all this stuff. And everyone says, well, wherever they are on the dietary spectrum, they're like, well, at least we all agree we just need a bunch of fruits and vegetables. You know, people always think that, and they think that I'm just going to be like, yep, you got it. Like, you know, it's like plant-based, animal-based, who cares? As long as we have our fruits and vegetables. And now I have to say, well, no, actually, we need to stop and think about this.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 55th episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. In this episode, I chat with Brian Sanders, founder and CEO of Sapien.org and the creator behind the soon-to-be-released documentary Food Lies. He's also the producer of the Peak Human podcast. In this episode, we discuss everything that is wrong with the food industry, as well as why eating plants may be, in fact, harming your health. And it's not just about the pesticides. Brian provides a really pragmatic and well-balanced opinion on how to live your best life based on his personal experiences and why much of what you've been told about food and health is wrong. Check out the show notes to follow Brian on social media, subscribe to his podcast, and support his upcoming Food Lies. Thank you for joining the Reinvent podcast. There's so much I'd like to chat to you about today. So you've got a story. I think everybody in this world who finds this passion for setting the story straight has a story themselves. Something has to sort of burn within you for you to get out there and make documentaries and make podcasts and try and get the word out there. So what was your story?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on and letting me share my story and other messages. It's been a journey. I guess it started 7 years ago when I turned 30 and I lost both of my parents to chronic disease. So that's a bit young. I mean, my parents were a bit older than normal parents, but I mean, I was 30 and I just had no parents. And I didn't really get it at that time that these diseases were preventable, right? You just hear, it's like, oh, well, they just, you know, that's just what happens in the modern world. And so it's also about the same time that I couldn't eat whatever I wanted anymore. You know, you turn 30 and you kind of, people say your metabolism slows down, which is a whole different story. I can tell you why that's not exactly true. It's just less adapted at eating the modern foods, basically, is the simplest way to put it. I talked to a great scientist, Dr. Michael Rose, about this, and he proved this out with his fruit fly studies for decades, and it's really interesting. But I couldn't maintain my, you know, level of body composition and health that I had before. And I made some simple changes once I started looking into the diet and lifestyle and how to prevent, how to not follow the same fate as my parents. And everything changed. I made a few switches in my diet and it was very simple, very straightforward, enjoyable. Yet everything changed and my body composition changed. I lost 4 pant sizes. All these little things that I thought were normal went away. You know, I had, you know, aching joints and different, you know, ailments. Whenever you do any sports or go on a hike, it's like, oh, this hurts, my knee hurts, all this stuff. That all went away. I had allergies, went away. I had chronic overuse injuries from the computer that went away. I slept better. I looked better. I felt better. My energy, it was just insane. So I just wanted to spread the word. And also the last part of this story is watching vegan films. It was about 4 years ago, I watched What the Health. People may know that one, right? Then the Game Changers came out more recently. But What the Health was so dumb. I mean, I just watched it and I turned it off because I was just like, this is too many lies. This is too crazy. This is obviously an agenda based on animal rights views, which is fine. And you can have a separate discussion about animal rights and, you know, different things about the environment. But it just, they make it into a propaganda film about food and health based on the wrong ideas and incorrect science and a whole bunch more. So I saw that and I knew I had to do something about it. And I was getting back into film at that time. And I grew up making films and videos and stuff. And so I teamed back up with my friend, actually, who in high school, we started making videos together in seventh grade. He went on to become a filmmaker and he shoots big commercials in Hawaii. And he's just a very accomplished production video editor, all that stuff. And so now we're making this film, Food Lies.
I was wondering how you got into filmmaking, because it's not easy to go make a documentary. It's quite it's an art to a documentary. I mean, you debunked Game Changers, which, I mean, pissed us all off. Anyone who can think for themselves got completely irritated with Game Changers, because we could see that almost everything mainstream is feeding an agenda. And it was very clear to anybody who really understands, I don't know, the human body, that this was nonsense. But how do you think they got away with, you know, getting so many people convinced that this was the truth when there's so much evidence to the contrary?
I think about that a lot. So it's effective filmmaking. Filmmaking is a type of propaganda. You can use it for good or you can use it for bad, right? You're engaged in this and it's feeding you all this info and you don't hear the other side, right? So if you're just sitting there watching the Game Changers and say, if I was in the room, I would be pausing it every 10 seconds. Every 10 seconds, I'd pause it and be like, no, this is the real story. You don't have that, right? As an average person. So they make a lot of points that sound good. Part of the vegan arguments, they sound good on the surface level. So I'm making this film like every day I'm working on Food Lies, and this is part of the, you know, I'm working on the script or rewriting it. These are the type of things we are talking about. We're saying this because we have to explain to people, why have they heard the opposite? Why is everything they've heard, you know, in the mainstream, all the mainstream people are saying eating meat is bad for the environment, it's bad for your health, all the same things. Why is that? And I could tell you why. And part of it is the big money and the big agendas. A lot of it is, and it works because these arguments on the surface level sound good. It just seems like, oh, well, yeah, if you feed the crops to the cows, why don't you just eat the crops straight? And that's more efficient. And on the surface, you're like, huh. You know, if you were in like fifth grade, you'd be like, oh, that makes sense. Uh-huh. And then you have to realize, no, they do a very valuable service of upcycling nutrition. And it's not just this pointless thing that we just randomly made up. No, that we've been developing this system for millions of years of humans eating animals to get proper nutrition, upcycled nutrition that has all the bioavailable components of food and nutrients that we can absorb. And that's why. And they eat low quality foods. For example, cows, cattle eat low quality foods like grass, cellulose, forage, stuff we can't eat, and upcycle it into protein that we can eat and keeps us healthy. So that's a very good example of taking a simple surface level argument. And, you know, you could trick people. You could just say, hey, yeah, we have so much land. Let's just feed the crops to the people. And it sounds good. And everyone could be on a rally. You know, you could be at a big rally and everyone's like, yeah, that makes sense. And then you have to look further. So that's what I did. That's what I've been doing for the past 7 years, is looking further. And yeah, the Game Changers also use tactics such as, having James Cameron and millions of dollars. And he's heavily invested in plant protein companies and stuff like that. So he has a huge conflict of interest, using celebrities like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's not even vegan, who eats eggs and animal products every day. The film uses tactics such as athletes to try to convince people, because people are impressionable and they look up to athletes. So they find, the very few, less than 0.5% of athletes that try to be vegan, and they try to get them in this film. These athletes aren't even vegan, or they stopped immediately, or their careers ended by them being vegan. So there's so much to it. And they use all the tricks in the book, and it worked on a lot of people.
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, for months afterwards, a lot of my clients, and even if I was on radio or whatever I was doing on a public platform, people would say, "Have you seen the game changers?" And oh my goodness, just to have to go through, all the reasons why you can't confuse entertainment with, physiology and what really is going on with the human body is, people don't really, you can almost see the attention span closing down, because that's going to take a little bit of effort. And I think one of the big problems with nutrition nowadays is people don't want to make the effort. It doesn't really take effort, but it's so much easier to go to a takeout for the average person and just throw that down their throats than to really think about what they're eating. So when somebody asks you, what do you think about game changers, and you have to go into all this technical explanation about, well, from who made it and why that's a problem, to get people to really understand and want to understand, want to learn. I think people only learn when they're faced with a crisis or really start paying attention. Like you went through, I went through something similar. When did you get into making food lies?
Okay, yeah. So I started the film 3.5 years ago, and it's not done yet. So I put out a lot of content since. So what happened is, I kind of just quit my job, around then, 3.5 years ago, just didn't want to go back to the real world. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I started just, doing my podcast, Peak Human, and doing all these other things I do. And the film has taken that long. And we've been all over the world filming. We have people from all over the world in it. Yeah. It's just the longest process. And we're kind of at the end here. We're actually going to a couple regenerative ranches in the middle of the US next week. Well, it's actually this weekend. Wow, yeah, it's already this week. And we're going to film with some great people. If you've heard of Alan Savory, or your audience knows about Alan Savory. Mm-hmm. He's a really famous TED Talk. Mm-hmm. And he's been helping basically heal the world, right? Like that whole phrase, let's heal the world. He's actually doing it and been doing it for decades. Yes. And people should look him up, look what he does. And we're going to get him in the film a little bit. It's just hard to track him down because he went back to Zimbabwe. But he has some, it's also, you can look up Savory Global or savory.global, and he has these hubs, and he does holistic management. So he advocates holistic management where we use plants and animals together desertification is a problem. It's a lot of the land is going and the soil is being ruined and turning into desert.
Sure.
And with the animals and using appropriate methods of planning, that we can, and rotational grazing and all these other systems, we can use animals to regenerate the land. And so these two ranches we're going to have used as methods for decades, and they're doing all the regenerative ag. And, this is the answer, right? This is to jump to the solution. Mm-hmm. If people are wondering, what's the solution? Well, the solution is regenerative agriculture. It's growing ruminants, which is cattle, sheep, goats, bison, in a regenerative way, managing them, moving them across the land in a planned way so that they can regenerate the soil and eat the healthy food from them that's not, finished in a feedlot on, corn or soy or something.
Yeah, because, as you said earlier, ruminants turn grass, which humans can't digest, into protein and fat, which is what we are designed to digest and thrive on, which is the whole point. And I find it just so ironic, having studied nutrition, become a clinical nutritionist, even studied functional nutrition, that nobody really goes deep into the reason why we need to eat animals and why we are evolved to eat animals. Nobody goes there. For about 15 years, I've been treating clients in my practice. And initially, people who came to see me were looking for weight loss. And over the years, what I've seen is an increase in autoimmune disease and a massive increase in digestive issues, leaky gut, IBS, Crohn's disease. And you know, these people are eating their grains, which we'll talk about shortly, and they're drinking their green juice and they're eating their broccoli, and they think this is a healthy lifestyle. And over the years, I mean, this is what I was taught: five a day, eating rainbows. This is what we should be doing. We need the fiber, that we need the phytonutrients. And then it came to a point where I was, I'm in the process of writing a book, and I was reviewing one of the chapters I'd written. It's not published yet. And I was reviewing what I'd written on phytonutrients and the importance of eating plants. And I thought, this is wrong. This bumps up against everything I've seen in my practice in the last 5 years, where when we take people off specifically raw food, most specifically grains, get rid of a lot of the greens, they heal. And I wasn't really putting two and two together. I was seeing this and I was getting these people to cook their vegetables if they were going to eat vegetables, but increasing their protein fivefold, you know, but grass-fed protein, increasing their healthy undenatured fats. And we were seeing healing. We're seeing people who were going from, you know, all sorts and kinds of issues, headaches, body aches, fibromyalgia, to being completely healthy and losing body fat. And when I read through these pages, I thought, I've really got to speak to somebody else, because we know about, or we have heard about, lectins and anti-nutrients. And so, you know, what do we do now? Everything we've been taught about eating vegetables and fruit, even your low sugar fruit, is in the evidence is coming up incorrect. It's just not coherent. It's not coherent. What we're seeing in the practice and what we are understanding as a healthy diet are not making sense. Even the blue zones are not making sense. When you give somebody lots of beans and chickpeas and lentils, we've got to cause a problem. Yet this is also, it's become so mainstream. And if you want to be healthy, you've got to eat your vegetables. So let's unpack, in your opinion, in your experience, the difference. What is an anti-nutrient, and where do we get our nutrients from if it's starting to become more and more apparent that vegetables are actually not the answer?
It's a shocking and hard to swallow paradigm shift, right? And I think that's part of the problem. And it took me a while to get here too. I mean, 7 years ago when I started on this journey, I was still doing kale shake and spinach shakes, you know, like blending those every day. I was, you know, but then I was like, I understood half of it, but the other half is what you're talking about. This is sort of the big moment when people realize there's another half of being red pilled on nutrition, right? When you see through the matrix, and then you have to look through the matrix of everything we've been told. So I talk to so many people about this stuff, right? It's all I do is I travel around the world talking to people about health and nutrition, learning for all this stuff. And everyone says, well, wherever they are on the dietary spectrum, they're like, well, at least we all agree, we just need a bunch of fruits and vegetables. You know, people always think that, and they think that I'm just going to be like, yep, you got it. Like, you know, it's like plant-based, animal-based, who cares? As long as we have our fruits and vegetables. And now I have to say, well, no, actually, we need to stop and think about this. I mean, it's not impossible to be healthy eating, you know, a bunch of fruits and vegetables, right? It's not impossible. I see people doing it for the time being, but we need to completely think about this in a different way. Because like you said, I work with Dr. Gary and we work with people all the time. Same thing. Cut out all of these things that we thought were necessary, all these leafy greens, all that type of stuff. Huge improvements. Yeah. This is becoming universal. And people had to kind of wake up to it to even think it's possible. And I think there was kind of a awakening when Dr. Sean Baker went on the Joe Rogan podcast 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I remember that day because that was the day I started filming. So that's why I always give this quote. 3.5 years ago, I was like, well, I remember because he went on December about 7th, 2017. And we filmed the day before. And he kind of whether you believe in carnivore diets or not, that I don't care. I mean, I don't follow a carnivore diet. I do an animal-based, you know, whole foods diet. But he went on to the Joe Rogan podcast and kind of got this idea in people's heads that you don't need fiber, you don't need plants, that people are healing without them. They're healing conditions we had no idea could be healed with just by eliminating all the plants. And I think that was a really big moment in history because it opened the door and people started thinking about like, oh, okay, maybe it's okay to not, you know, eat your five a day or whatever it is. And then more and more content came out from this. Different people came in the space. It became more mainstream. And it's really amazing. So where to start? Anti-nutrients. Anti-nutrients, plants don't want to be eaten. You know, the classic,
yes.
The easiest way to explain to someone is plants don't want to be eaten, right? They don't want their seeds, nuts, their shoots, leaves, roots, all that stuff, except for the fruit. Maybe so, right? That's the one exception is the plant would want the fruit to be eaten because
sure. It needs spread the seed to be spread, yeah.
And you know what? Guess what? The fruit has the least anti-nutrients, right? I mean, the fruit, it does have a lot of sugar, especially since we engineered all these fruits to be ultra sweet, but really there's not many anti-nutrients in the fruit. This is actually okay. If you need sugar, you know, if you're like a growing kid, get your fruit, whatever, right? Sure. Mm. It's just, that's where the least anti-nutrients are. The most anti-nutrients are in the seeds and in the leaves. And these are things that plants don't want to be eaten. They don't have defense mechanisms. They can't get up and run away. So they have to produce the chemicals that make bugs and whatever else not want to eat them. It's very simple. And it's not debated either. It sounds sometimes like it's like this wacky thing. I mean, I guess some people try to debate it. But we know that they have these compounds in them. And there's lectins and phytates and oxalates and all these things that we know are in plants. I've been to vegan websites that go through every anti-nutrient and help them be. It's great that the vegan website is actually helping. You know, being honest with their with their people, because usually they're not. And it says, oh, hey, you know, watch out for oxalates. Yeah, don't eat a whole bunch of raw spinach and raw kale. And if you want to eat it, you cook it. Then you can, you know, there's different ways to cook. Yes, you can pressure cook beans and it'll get some of the lectins out or a lot of the lectins out. There's all these ways to get rid of some anti-nutrients, but that's a great indication that there's a problem. If you're doing all these complicated ways to remove them, sure. We know, we can admit that they're there. And it's because they're natural plant defense mechanisms. And it's very obvious and, you know, necessary in nature. So
What really amazed me, I was reading, I think it was Leah Keith, The Vegetarian Myth. I love that book because mm-hmm. she explains so coherently how when a ruminant eats a plant, how it turns everything, every part of that animal, from the organ meats to the milk to the meat, have a concentrate of your phytonutrients. Those phytonutrients that we're supposedly looking for in our rainbow of fruit and vegetables every day are sitting there in the richest form in an animal that, let's put it this way, that's been reared correctly, naturally, as mm-hmm. close to nature as possible. And it's almost like the secret is sitting in front of us, but we choose to look the other way and make life complicated. And I find that really ironic, you know, about human beings. I mean, the fat of an animal is our richest sources of our fat-soluble vitamins, but we go look for them in a pill because we've been told that animal fats are bad for you, but they're not. I mean, doesn't it sometimes feel to you like there's a mountain of misinformation, and how long is it going to take to slowly chip away at this until we start making some headway?
Well, there is, and I think there is a reason for it. And it's, you know, there's a lot of big money and big organizations and big powers that are kind of pushing this. So it is really hard to get through this. And the things that are funding all this are the processed food and the food companies, and they don't. That's how your media is brought to you. Like those advertisements is exactly how it's possible, and you can't. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to have them getting this message out there. So it's going to be a long road to kind of undo it all because mm-hmm. they've just anchored themselves in the paradigm, right? I just called the mainstream paradigm, and we're talking about a completely new paradigm. So. Man, it's going to be hard to dig our way out of this one, but there's so many people that kind of see through it and realize that, yeah, it's not what they think. So.
Yeah, and especially where you're looking at, I mean, when you're talking about big food and big food manufacturers, how the plant-based movement has played directly into the hands of big food manufacturers. It's created a market. It's created another platform for artificial, you know, factory grown meats. And I just find it diabolical that the person going and picking that plant-based burger out of the fridge at the supermarket is doing so because they think they're making a healthier choice for themselves, not thinking that this is completely synthetic, that, you know, there's so much trust that's being put into what we're being fed without question. And whether we're talking about epidemics, pandemics, vaccines, a synthetic meat, people don't question. And I think for me, that's the biggest frustration is people take lots of people, the general public take so much at face value without questioning the logic. And I think that's really frightening for us as a species is we don't question. We just trust the pharmaceutical companies or the supermarket or the restaurant that they've got our best interest at heart without saying, how is this made? How many millions of acres of grasslands were ripped apart? How many animals, wild animals, were sacrificed just to grow soy? And nobody is having that or even asking that question. And I find that quite terrifying because there's a lot of feeling righteous because we had a meat-free Monday. And I think people have really got to wake up.
It's the most important point. The most important thing you can do is look at both sides of the arguments and do your own research. And that's actually what's being discouraged. So it all kind of ties together. I sound like a conspiracy theorist already, but that's even just painting people as conspiracy theorists is part of the attack against thinking for yourself. And now if you're talking about anything to do with pandemics and all this other stuff, the other side of the issue is blocked, it's censored, you're discouraged from listening to any other sources, but I'm saying, hey, well, there's this great doctor that's treated thousands of patients. Why can't I listen to this doctor who has a different opinion? Like, no, that guy's messed up. He's wrong. Like, well, we need to look at both sides, right? That's the number one thing. If people can look at both sides, then they'll see through all this stuff. And then eventually you'll learn about health and food and disease and all this stuff. But it's being actively censored and discouraged and maligned, smeared, you know, people who like bring up stuff about the other side of the issue, that they are smeared and thrown off of social media platforms. And, you know, I'm worried about that too. I'm just trying to stick to health and, you know, food and that type of stuff. But I feel like, you know, sometimes my posts were blocked or I got the same amount of followers every day for, you know, years. And then all of a sudden for 3 months, I got zero followers. Something, you know what I mean? I just want to know what's going on. And and am I going against this message? So you have to think of the motivations of these people. And yes, that there's huge motivations to keep their highly processed foods being the healthier option. And that it's almost like this cliched statement already that there's no money in whole foods. There's no money in regenerative agriculture. There's no money in telling someone to get better sleep and to go out in the sun and get vitamin D and to not eat all the time and to just go, you know, shop on the perimeter of the grocery store, you know, and just buy the whole food. There's no money in that. No one's making money from that. And so no one's pushing that message and all the money is in the other side. I always say the profit's in the processing. So these processed foods, that's where you make all the profit. Right. If people ask, well, why, how did this all happen? It's a long story. But part of it is that if you process down these really cheap foods like corn, wheat, and soy, you process them into just garbage, nutritional garbage, try to add back some nutrients, some fortification maybe, and put it in a box. And that's basically breakfast cereal. Then you sell it for, you know, $5-6 a box. Uh-huh. That box is probably like 8 cents of, you know, of cheap corn that was, you know, just covered in glyphosate. So yes,
yeah,
it's 6 cents and then you can sell for $6. Maybe that's exaggeration. I mean, there's more costs associated with the process along the way, but that's why. So now the opposite would be grass-fed meat, which takes years to develop lots of costs associated with it, very small profit margin. And there's no like branding. It's not like, oh, everyone knows about the big meat brand that's regenerative. You know, there's no, it's not like there's the Kellogg's of grass-fed meats. So then if these people have these huge, huge profit margins, now that's why you have giant food corporations that fund all the research. I posted a graphic of all the people that fund the nutrition, the dietetics association and all these stuff. It's Pepsi, Kraft Foods, Kellogg's, all these worldwide gigantic food corporations. There's hundreds and hundreds of them in this circle that all fund it. And so with their giant profit margin, they're funding research to try to show that their foods are okay. You know, it's like, oh, just drink a soda, drink a Coke, but then you have to go exercise for an hour and then it's okay. It's complete garbage. And they fund studies. They have lobbyists out there, tens of millions of dollars spent on lobbying, billions. Then advertising. Well, that's the billions, trillions on advertising, right? If you have all this profit on these cheap foods, you can do all the marketing. It's blanketed for decades. Everything from magazines and newspapers of the old days to the TV commercials to now everything online to Game Changers film funded by, you know, Big Protein and James Cameron, or P Protein and James Cameron. So, oh man, you got to look at where this message is coming from. And then you have to look at the opposite, which is a little ranch trying to do things correctly. And they have a couple grand. They make a month to stay alive. And what are they going to do? I can talk to them on my podcast and then I can try to share it with people. And that's about all I can do other than make this film.
Yeah. What is it going to take for the world to wake up, to change? Or are we heading down a path of natural selection where those who won't think for themselves will just disappear eventually? And, you know, it almost feels like we're never going to get there. People like yourself who are doing everything you can to change the narrative, to get people to think. There are so many people who are just trying to have conversations to get people to wake up. But it sometimes feels to me like, I don't know what it's going to do, what it's going to take for the big companies of the world who are sitting in these positions where they can actually change the fate of humanity if that is what they decide to do. Because I can't believe for one minute that a CEO of a Kellogg's really wants his children to eat the cereal that he manufactures.
No, I don't think they're eating that. No.
I don't think they're actually eating their own products because they know what's in there. So at some point, there has to be some kind of conscience that has to kick in. Or maybe I'm just naive. But what do you think? Do you think this world will ever wake up?
You want me to be honest? I think there is going to be kind of like two different populations. And I think there's a divide. I try to make a graphic about this, about the growing divide between the healthy and the not healthy. And it's the people who are awake and the people who are not awake. And it's growing and growing. There's stats like in the US, 88% of Americans aren't metabolically unwell. You know, there's all kinds of stats about how obese we are, how much chronic disease, type 2, all this stuff. So we're in this direction, right? It's very clear. You could draw any type of graph and it's just all in the wrong direction. The line is just going up and and then there's another group of people, the ones listening to this podcast that don't even need to hear all this because they've probably figured it out already, that don't buy into that whole system. And I'm here in Texas. I have a lot of people around me that are woken up and I'm seeing what's happening. They are not interested in new drug treatments that are being pushed. They're not interested in fake foods. They believe in natural health. They are getting sleep. They're doing all these simple natural things of how ancestral diets and lifestyles have always been. And they are in prime health. I mean, they're out there. These are the people who don't even see a doctor. They don't need a doctor. They're perfectly healthy. They're smart. They're entrepreneurial. And I'm seeing that these people we're almost creating two societies. And I didn't know we were going to get down this rabbit hole, but I think there is sort of like this something that's going to be happening. And there's going to be 90 8% of the people are going to follow along and get fatter and sicker. And then they're going to make some government programs to keep people alive, get the universal basic incomes, all this type of stuff. And they're going to be just barely surviving on the processed food diets and the processed, quote, processed lifestyles. And then there's going to be the small groups of people that don't buy into it. They don't need to see doctors. We almost have to live outside the system. And we're getting ready for that in Texas almost. We're not really getting ready for it, but you see it happening. It's like, I only get my food from farmers markets or ranchers, right? It's like, I'm outside. I don't only do it. I see a lot of people only doing it. I mean, I live like right above this Whole Foods. I'm like, yeah, I got to go to the Whole Foods and I get some good goat yogurt, you know, something that whatever. So we're going outside the system. We're supremely healthy and the people around us are getting unhealthier by the day. And if that's what it is, then that's what it is. And I'm okay with that because I'm doing everything I can to stop it. But I'm also okay with finding my tribe and my community and us just, it's almost like the Amish. You know anything about the Amish?
I do, yes.
They just live outside of society. They don't use technology. I'm not saying we're not going to use technology, but they kind of just live a natural life and they're just there. They're doing their thing. And I'm like, what if there's this whole other part of society that kind of just, you know, lives naturally.
Breaks off from what everyone else is doing and everyone's welcome. But, you know, you really can't convert the whole world. You can just do your best.
Yeah. But, and I'm trying, that's why I'm doing both. You know, I'm connecting with my community and where people are like, oh, I'm buying this property outside of town and that type of stuff. But I'm also trying to wake up the population and let them know. And, you know, maybe it'll work or maybe I'll just be kicked off of social media and my film will be thrown off of Netflix and who knows? I don't know.
Oh, goodness. So you visited Africa. When did you visit? You were Tanzania, Uganda. Was that for Food Lies?
Yeah. That was just in February. Of this year.
This year.
2021.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we're filming for Food Lies. We visited three main hunter-gatherer tribe groups, right? The Hadza, the Maasai, and the Batwa. Mm-hmm. Those are the pygmies in Uganda. And so we were filming with them, studying like how they lived. And it was very interesting. They were all light years healthier than any modern people. Even the ones that were unhealthy, there was a group of Hadza that were in the sort of a touristy, more, you know, in society and all these tourists would show up and bring them treats and they had kind of bad teeth and all that, but they were still way healthier than anyone else. We went on like a 10-hour hunt with them. They didn't even drink water. It was crazy. Like we gave them some water. They're like, oh yeah, I'll drink some water. But if we weren't there, they wouldn't even need it. They're just in a whole different class of health than us. And well, their bodies just kind of work in a different way. They do obviously drink water, but they'll just find dirty water in a tree and drink it out of the baobab tree. And they have a whole different microbiome too that can handle that.
That's the thing. They're so acclimatized to this, their environment and their surroundings. But I mean, where I live in Johannesburg in South Africa it's really so interesting to see, you know, we've got as Western or as first world as Africa's trying to be, the African people in South Africa suffer from diabetes just like the Americans, just like the Australians and the British, because their staple food is sugar-based. It's Coke, it's white bread, it's corn. But if you had, there's no, almost no African person that I know of who would say no to meat. It is so entrenched. Meat is first prize. And I think to Africans and Africa, you'll see a vegan African person here because it's still so much part of our culture is that meat is the most important part of the nutrition system. And I mean, when you visited these tribes, were you able to have conversations about, you know, what they eat? How often do these people go and eat tubers? Do they dig up tubers? You know, what is their plant to protein ratio? What did you find?
Well, I visited Africa a few times. So I've been to Joburg and Cape Town and all over. And yeah, well, everywhere, whenever I leave the US, everyone is focused on meat. It's like the whole society is based on how do I afford meat, right? It's like my whole job and everything I do is so I can afford meat. And when we get it, it is a celebration. Yes, 100% across the world. So these people are the same. This is all they do. It's just their daily life is how do we get meat? And so it's important beyond anything. I mean, yes, the women do stay back and try to gather leaves or tubers or something, but the focus is getting the meat, and they eat the animal nose to tail. They eat everything, absolutely everything. They're, you know, they're cracking up the brains. We ate a little of the brains of this little tick tick. They eat the organs. So they opened up the animal, ate some of the organs raw, passed it around. We ate some raw liver, stuff like that. And then they put on the fire, and we just ate the animal then from nose to tail, every single thing. That kid just chewing on the head, you know, like getting all the little bits of flesh, you know, just, of course, this is so obvious when you take away the modern society we're in and this vegan idea, like I don't think they understood what vegans were.
There's no word for vegan.
Foreign concept. It didn't make any sense to them. Zero sense. And we didn't spend enough time to know exactly their ratio of their diet and all that type of stuff. But what we did know is all the groups we visited just wanted to eat meat. And it seemed like they just sat around eating meat all day. Like they would go get it and eat it. And then the women were over in the corner. We went to two Hadza groups. One of them, they were processing pumpkin leaves. So this is part of the story is they've been pushed off their land and they don't have the big animals anymore. You know, it depends on how far back you go. We had gigantic animals. If you go far enough, it's like the woolly mammoth and the big, big elephants and all that stuff. So we don't have those anymore. And so people relied on smaller animals. And now some of these animals are just pushed into game reserves and now no one can get them. And they're relying on whatever small animals they can get. And then they're relying on like pumpkin patch. Like there's a patch of pumpkins that we saw when we were out hunting with the Hadza. And so these women in the Hadza group had to go to that pumpkin patch. So this is the modern thing that they have to do. I don't even know if it's their pumpkin patch or what, but they had to get all the leaves off the top of just pumpkin leaves. I don't know if there's any nutrition in pumpkin leaves. You know, it's something.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they would they go back home and they would slowly pick apart and try to get out all the super fibrous, you know, like parts of the stem and all this. And it took forever. And then they would have to have this as a supplement, right? It's a fallback to part of their diet was these pumpkin leaves, but the men were out there getting the meat and, you know, some honey. We have found a little honey along the way, but there wasn't even that much honey. People think, oh man, there's unlimited honey. And all these people are trying to say, no, it took forever to get into one tree. They had to smoke it out. They had to do all these things. We got out and there was one honeycomb and it was dry. And we ate it. We're like, oh, this is so cool. And it tasted a little bit sweet, but it was, you know, it's not like there's always honey. There was a very, very little honey in this empty comb. Yeah. So the other group we were with had the tubers. And so, yes, the women would dig them up. We went over and spent time with the women after we spent time with the men. And they're just chewing on these tubers. And yeah, they weren't getting any nutrition from them. I guess you can get a little glucose out of them, but they were just chewing on these tubers and then spitting out the pulp. So they were not eating all the fiber. I don't really know where this fiber idea comes from. I mean, I guess the other group was eating the leaves, but they were trying to take out a lot of the fiber anyway because it was just indigestible. But when they eat the tubers, they're not really eating the fiber anyway.
Yeah. It's you know, it's amazing how people survive, actually thrive on so little. And they, you know, they don't have the diseases that we see in the Western world. But for people listening, what is the ancestral diet?
Well, yeah, it depends on how far back you go. So that we do this in the film too. The ancestral diet is really just animal based. It was protein and fat mostly for the longest part of history. If you know, we look at our diets in the smallest little lens. We look at it in the past 10 years, right? Or maybe in the past like 50 years, you're like, oh, what did my grandparents eat? Or maybe you look at, oh, since agricultural revolution. All of these are so small compared to what we ate for all of history. And what we ate for the lion's share of history was fatty meat. We would eat bone marrow, we'd eat brains, we'd eat all the meat, all the fat on these big animals or smaller animals. And we would supplement it with you know, whatever was growing around. You know, maybe we have some berries for a couple months of the year. Maybe we have some tubers for some of the time. But it's pretty simple that for the majority of the year, we were eating meat and fat, and then we would have certain other, you know, fruits and berries and whatnot in some of the other seasons. And that's how people thrive when we work with them today. Like we were talking about, you put people back on these diets. They're not out there collecting kale. There was no kale.
Yes.
You know, like it's just this crazy paradigm. Like we're looking at it under the Whole Foods paradigm, like the store, you know, yes. The grocery store Whole Foods, where there's a million fruits and vegetables. There's this whole rainbow. And everyone's like, of course we have to. This never existed in nature. The plants didn't even exist in the first place, much less a store that could group them all together like this. This is a completely false notion. So people survived amazingly well on whole animal nutrition and fat. And back to what you're talking about, the nutrients, yes, they are concentrated in the organs and in the marrow and then, you know, all these different parts that we ate. And that's, yeah, there are some phytonutrients there. I talked to a great scientist, Dr. Stefan von Vliet, who does these studies, and he's looking at the compounds in meat. And he's finding that there's tens of thousands of these secondary compounds that accumulate in meat that are... Yeah. I mean, maybe those can be beneficial to us. We don't have to eat the plants necessarily. The animals do it for us. Like you said, they eat the grasses, they eat all the things, and they concentrate the nutrients in the right place. And then we eat the animals and we get them in a more bioavailable form. And so, yes, that's what ancestral diet is relying on animals. And I mean, it could be seafood. It could be mollusks and shellfish and all that type of stuff. Interviewed a lot of great people about that and how these seafood helped our evolution and our nutrients over this course of, you know, our brain growing, and we would always be by water and we could collect shellfish. And the women were out there collecting shellfish and all this type of stuff. So I guess that's what the actual ancestral diet is, that's how humans thrive.
Yeah. So when you decided way back when to change your lifestyle, you know, from a sort of a normal standard diet, and you decided that was a draw the line in the sand, how did you approach, you know, how did your eating change? What did you give up? What did you focus on?
Yeah. Well, I first thing I did was give up all the grains, or fine grains and sugar. Right. So that was the easy part. I just stopped eating all the bread and tortillas and like pasta and all that stuff. Immediately felt amazing and immediately lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of people's first step, right? You get rid of the processed sugars and grains, and those are in all the processed foods, and you feel great. You'll lose weight, all this great stuff. But then you got to keep going, right? You got to go down. Then I started learning more about the seed oils. So all these vegetable oils, they're no good. Right. Yeah. So you could still be eating these oils and you think you're doing okay. Like a lot of these olive oil isn't even real olive oil. You know, it's like cut, and they've done studies to show it's falsely, you know, labeled as olive oil. I have no time for any oils anymore. I just use animal fats. So then I started moving down to, just using animal fats instead of any oils. I use butter and, you know, you can use ghee, you can save your bacon grease, you can save your beef tallow. All that type of stuff. And then I started cutting down more of the plant foods and all these really raw, like all the raw plant foods, vegetables, green leafy green, all that type of stuff got even better. Then I started bumping up, doubling my protein. It was this long transition to now I'm just getting most of my calories from meat, fish, and eggs. Uh-huh. And I have on the side the least toxic plant foods, the best plant foods that do not have all the anti-nutrients and can provide me with some flavor, some other, you know, vitamins and minerals that aren't maybe as abundant in animals. Animals kind of have it all, but, you know, people say, oh, well, there's not that much in certain, you know, there's not a great amount of vitamin C, but you could get in liver. And it's like, how much vitamin C do we really need? And there's all these
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right? So... But anyway, I just like to eat I have side dishes of fermented vegetables, for example, that would get out the oxalates, right? I have some sauerkraut, right? And because the process of fermenting, this is what humans figured out over the years, is that would get rid of people. I mean, they made it up. You know, they didn't know the nutrition science, but now we know, it has all these probiotics, gets rid of the anti-nutrients. It got rid of most of the oxalates, you know, that were in the cabbage, something like that. So I'll eat some of that. I'll eat some avocado. Yeah. So that's, I kind of went on this journey, and people can also go on this journey where you start with just the grocery store meat if you have to. And then as soon as you can, you end up with the grass fed, grass finished, you know, your farm. But it's a journey, right? It's like you got to start somewhere. You're eating all the packaged foods. You don't know what is going on with your health. It takes a while to get to the end state.
Yeah, I agree. It's not something you can just jump into. It's a case of and people are fearful of cutting out the grains and the sugars, and they feel they're going to be antisocial, they're going to miss out, or they're going to get cravings. But what's really interesting, I find for myself, is I can't bear sweet stuff anymore. I find it actually really off-putting. And years ago, I'd go through a bar of chocolate, no problem. Now, the thought, even the smell, it's a little bit like your body says no. And it's really interesting to see how when you start giving your body what it needs, what it's meant to eat, how easy it becomes to just go for those things, how well you feel. I can get through a whole chicken. I can eat a whole chicken just in one go. And I feel so good doing that. It's like you get this endorphin rush when you eat protein. And my biggest wish in this world is for women to understand that protein will not make them into Schwarzenegger. You know, they're not going to look like bodybuilders when they eat protein. They're going to get lean. They're going to get healthy. Then they're going to combat diabetes. They're going to turn around their health. And this, you know, it's so frustrating, because when you have been through this yourself and you understand how well you feel, and for somebody who spent a lot of time with doctors because I was never well, it was profound. And it gets to a point, and I know you've been there because you've been there yourself, is you just want to tell the whole world that there is a really simple way to fix your life. And I think everyone's on their own journey.
It's important for people to know that is your personal story, and I have my personal story. And it sounds like you can just discount that because, oh, that's just an anecdote. And I just want to maintain that this is not an anecdote, that there are tens of thousands of people that have these same stories. Yeah. I wish we could make it more formally into a study, but I know hundreds and hundreds of doctors that do this with their patients. And each one of those doctors have from, say, 1,000 to 10,000 patients that have the same story. This is everywhere. This is everywhere.
Yeah.
I just want people to think this is just us talking about our personal story. It's amazing. It sounds like it's too good to be true. It's like, oh yeah, I don't see the doctor anymore. This is happening around the world. It's just people don't know about it, and it's hard to study, and no one wants to study it because, again, there's no money in it.
There is no money in it, but one step at a time we'll get there. And when is Food Lies due to hit mainstream?
I think we're trying to finish it by the end of the year. We've been kind of crowdfunding it. You know, this is not funded by anyone but me and my team and the crowd. So you can go to foodlies.org, and we're still trying to get money together to finish the post-production, do the graphics. I mean, this money is just going for graphics and music and stuff like that. And try to get about by the end of the year. So people who back the film, it's through Indiegogo, through the foodlies.org link. They'll get it first. And then it will supposedly go to Netflix by the spring. Yeah.
That would be amazing. So I'm going to do whatever I can do through my channels to make sure everybody goes and can support the film. And of course, I'll put all of the links on the show notes, and people can hook up and connect and subscribe to your podcast. And let's just keep doing the good work and getting the word out there that you don't have to be sick. You just got to eat real food.
It's that simple. It's that simple. And, you know, now that you say that, it's almost like I have to spend 4 years and make a 2-hour film just to tell people that message. But that's what it takes, right? It will take the message. The takeaway of the film is eat real foods, right? Avoid the processed foods, and meat, animal foods are healthy. Yeah. Those two things. If you realize that animal foods are healthy and you avoid processed foods, your life will change. Those two little things. It's going to take us 2 hours to tell people that. And it took 4 years to condense the information into two hours using the best worldwide experts, all that. So that is the ultimate takeaway. And maybe people can just skip right ahead and do that.
Just save yourself a lot of grief. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brian, thank you again for your time. I'm just so grateful that you made the time to chat today, and let's carry on doing the work and getting it out there.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.